What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Providence POV. Joe and Peter here with you as per usual. Man, it's a tough weekend. Providence falls to Villanova at home to fall to 18-11 overall, 9-9 in conference. Many of the major bracketologists or bracket experts now have us out of the field. This was a game that you really, really needed to have, not in terms of just, you know, NCAA tournament bubble positioning, but also now in terms of Big East tournament end of year conference seating. So a lot of repercussions from this loss. The team looked terrible in the second half. But first and foremost, Peter, what's going on? How you doing?
Could be doing better, Joe. Probably the worst possible week you and I could have asked for when we did our earlier in the week show, or last week show at this time, and we were previewing, I guess, the Marquette game, but we were also taking a little bit of a big picture look at the week ahead, right? And what we needed from this team this week, right? And I think we got the exact opposite of what we needed this week. And
yeah.
It puts us in a bit of a situation right now, right? And you can't control everything outside of your control, right? Like you and I talked about some scenarios of seeding in the Big East, right? Like if they're 5, 6, 7, right? And a lot of it's some of it's outside of their control, right?
Yep.
And we can't control that. The only thing you can control is you got to take care of business on Tuesday, and you got to go play with your hair on fire on Saturday night, and then you leave it up to the Big East tournament. But you got a big game coming up tomorrow night or tonight, whenever you're listening to this, a team that we know Ed Cooley and his staff wants to beat us. So,
yeah, I think you make a good point. You know, things are in terms of Big East tournament seeding, things are now out of our hands, right? I would like to caveat that things were very much in our control on Saturday. You know, you beat Villanova, take care of business against Georgetown. And then obviously the UConn game is a toss-up. There's a very good chance that you're locked into that 5 or 6 seed. But now, you know, it ranges from 5 to 8, depending on what happens around you. And while, you know, the theme of the past month and a half of the show has been, you know, everything is still in front of us, I do think, you know, that is starting to expire a little bit. You know, even if we go 2-0 this week, seeding for the Big East tournament is still up in the air. And the reason I'm very heavy, and you and I are very heavy on Big East tournament seeding, is because, you know, it's going to be a determinant of the matchups that we get at Madison Square Garden, which does hold the potential for more Q1 games. And the reason I say that is because now for the bubble conversation, you need to start making up some ground here, because you know, losing to Villanova, who was behind you on the bubble, you know, Villanova does the leapfrog, and now there are other teams that are being considered ahead of us. You know, I've seen Syracuse in the conversation now, which is mind blowing to me. But you know, record wins, metrics, all of that is starting to come into play now. And Providence losing that game it hurts. I do think if you win against UConn on Saturday, your chances are really good. But you know, beating the number one team in the country after they just won the Big East outright season championship, I don't want to have to bank on one game to get us in. So that's why seeding, long-winded tangent back to the original point, that's why seeding for the Big East tournament is so important. And that's why you really would have liked to have Saturday's win over Villanova.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you talk about, obviously, Big East seeding, like we said earlier or a minute ago, that it's kind of out of control. The one weird thing is that your chances of making the NCAA tournament is in your own control, right? Which is, it's always a good thing, right? Like you said, like you go 2-0 this week, right? You right the wrong that was one of the worst weeks of the season, which was last week against the loss against Marquette and the loss against Nova. If you right that wrong and you go on a 2-0 week this week, you're right back in the tournament field, right? And
absolutely,
it puts you in a great spot. Obviously, that being said, you have a tough game on the road against Georgetown Tuesday night that you cannot take lightly. obviously, because if you lose your percentages of going to the NCAA tournament, just completely almost come crashing down. And then obviously Saturday night, you're facing the defending national champs, the top five team in the country in UConn, right? So it's not easy this week. This is a tough week. Last week was tough. This week's tough as well. And it's a little bit more added pressure, but everything's still right in front of you. You have a chance to right or wrong this week. And obviously we're going to talk about Saturday's game in a second, but you could hopefully put whatever the heck happened this past week behind you. And if you just one game at a time, get back on track Tuesday night and maybe just build some momentum heading into this weekend.
Yeah, 100%. You know, let's get into Saturday's game because it was really a tale of two halves, which has you know,
when is it not?
I was going to say 20 minute team. we're becoming
it always here. Is.
But anyway, first half, Providence comes out strong, puts on a really good offensive showing, posting 37 points. The defense looked okay. I still thought Villanova got off some clean shots. But again, like some of them were contested, like the contested threes, you know, you kind of tip your cap, but you know, open looks in the paint, I don't love. But anyway, the defense wasn't awful in the first half, but it wasn't fantastic. It wasn't the Providence defense that we had seen flashes of throughout the season. Open up the second half, Villanova goes out on an 18-2 run to start the second half. They take the lead and they don't look back. Providence's offense looked absolutely abysmal. You know, this is where, and I know we talked about this off air, Peter. I know this is something you've been tweeting about, but this is where the one-dimensional nature of our offense was really put on display. You double-team Josh Aduro when he gets his hands on the basketball, and you play airtight defense on Devin Carter and force the role players to make shots, which they could not do. The result was 23 second-half points. I do want to point out, I've been seeing a lot on the Villanova Twitter side of things saying that Kyle Neptune outcoached Kim English in the second half. And I just can't emphasize how tone deaf that is to what happened. Kyle Neptune isn't the first coach to double team Josh Aduro in the paint and have put their best defender on Devin Carter. That's just Sean Miller did it. Shaka Smart did it. Rick Pitino's done it. Like this, Kyle Neptune didn't crack that code. For what it's worth, there was a lid on the basket for open looks for Providence too. So I wouldn't say that, you know, Kim got outcoached. I just think that Providence got outplayed, lid on the baskets, shot stopped going in. And then the defense was, you know, not as energized, not as locked in. And Kim said this in the press conference, it's harder to play half court defense when you're taking the ball out of the net. Oh, I'm sorry. Harder to play half-court offense when you're constantly taking the ball out of the net.
Yeah. I'll play devil's advocate, right? Because it makes it fun because you and I are both in a depressing-ass mood right now. I do think – I don't know if Kim English got outcoached by Kyle Neptune, but I do think Kyle Neptune's probably gotten a little more flack than he might have deserved this year. You can tell what a healthy Justin Moore does for his team. And I think we kind of figured out what a healthy Justin Moore looks like, right? I thought Justin Moore had a really good performance. And lately, Justin Moore is playing like the guy we saw a couple of years ago in that Final Four before that injury. And he battled injuries this year. But I don't think it was one of Kim English's best coaching performances. And that's not what you were saying either. But I do think Kyle Neptune had is probably got a little bit more flock than he was supposed to. Look, they had some bad losses early on. One of the reasons they're in the bubble and not solidified in the NCAA tournament was a couple of bad losses in the non-con. But I do think a lot of Villanova, this is more a shot at Villanova fans, I guess, or Villanova people in general, the hate that Neptune got for most of the year when it was his second year as a coach and he was still trying to build something after replacing one of the all-time greats. But going back to our start of our second half, right? And I think you and I have had the same freaking conversation over and over and over and over again. It's the same conversation. They go on these spurts on offense where they just cannot make shots. And it's not like, oh, Peter or Joe, you guys are exaggerating. They're just average. No, they are playing terrible in these spurts. That's the difference. If they were average or a little bit below average in these kind of lulls on offense for 4 to 5 minutes, then they would have a couple more wins because they wouldn't have been in such big holes. But they go from looking like a competent, functional, offensive team to a team that just can't make shots, right? Like, you double-team Josh Adoro. You put one of your better defenders. I just hit my mic. You put one of your best defenders on Devin Carter, right? And then you don't have guys outside that can make shots consistently, right? And you and I know that, right? Everyone that follows this team tightly and follows this team closely, that's not just like a national person looking at this team, knows exactly who this team is. They're led by two guys on offense, and then they have a couple other guys that can get hot at times but have not found enough consistency, right? They have guys that are playing in positions and are playing minutes that we never expected them to play even before the Bryce Hopkins injury. Yep. Even before the Bryce Hopkins injury in the past spring and past this summer, we have guys playing in spots in critical moments in Big East play that were not expected to play this many minutes, or guys that are playing in roles. Like, for example, Tiki Gaines is playing in a role that we never expected him to play in. And it shows because it's making guys do stuff they're not supposed to and they can't. And when Adoro, that doesn't have a great game, or they're double him, or Devin Carter's not as effective shooting and struggles from the three, this is exactly what you get, right? You win this game if Devin Carter and Josh Adoro have a little bit of a better game, right? Because everyone else around them did exactly what they've mostly done. It's nothing new. And I'm not saying to blame Josh Adoro or to blame Devin Carter, but if you go back and look at most of the box scores that we've won in Big East play, it's because Josh Adoro have 20+. Devin Carter has 20+. We win the game. When they don't, we don't win games.
Well, I think part of that too, and I know you were touching on this, is the need to start relying on role-playing guys, right? Devin was missing three-pointers in the second half that he normally makes at home. Josh was missing bunnies in the paint that he normally makes at home. And to your point, it's often rare that Devin and Josh are both off on the same night. And like I said earlier, it's no shock what defensive sets are coming at us. Josh gets the ball, double team. Devin gets the ball, your best defender isn't giving him an inch of space. So that's not, surprising. Like, Kyle Neptune didn't reinvent the wheel with, the defensive schemes in the second half. But what you can't count on is Josh and Devin both not playing well and not having another guy step up and score. Now, listen, Ticket had a quiet 11 points. Six of those 11 came in the first half with his two threes. Two of them came at the line, and then he had an open three in the second half, and that was it. But, this is a night when you need a Jaden Pierre or a Corey Floyd Jr. to really step up. It's just we're at the point in the season now where you really can't afford to have guys put up goose eggs up and down the stat sheet and think like, oh, okay, that's okay, because it's not. And, to your point earlier, Providence went 6 minutes into the second half without scoring. No field goals, no free throws, nothing. And by that point, Villanova's lead was only 4, but it took another 2 minutes for that to balloon to 13. So take with that what you will, but it was not a promising performance from a team in a really critical game this late in the season.
It also, Joe, translates when we go on these walls, and I think we saw this in the first 5 to 6 minutes of the second half, right? When Villanova, it was a 20-4 run, correct? I want to get the number right.
Yes, 20-4 to start the second half.
Yes. Okay, so the 20-4 run to start the second half, right? We see our team struggle offensively, but it always somehow affects our defense, right? And not somehow, like, you get it, you get how it works, right? When you're struggling on offense and nothing is going in, and it's consistently you guys consistently missing shots over and over and over again, right? It's tough to go play defense, but it becomes a spiral effect, right? Because you're not scoring,
and then they go 8-for-11 or 8-for-10, right? And then it's just, it's a whirlwind, right? It's not like you're not scoring and they're not scoring. And it's just one of your, those ugly Big East games that if you're not a Big East fan, you flip because it's disgusting to watch. It's just, you're not scoring. And then on the other side of the ball, you're giving up open threes. You're not guarding your man. You're losing your guy on a screen. And it just spirals out of control. And that's what we saw on Saturday. We saw it completely at home spiral out of control in a matter of moments, right? And you go up 3 at the half, and then you just come out completely lifeless. And it's this is not a new thing for us. It's been a thing that has happened throughout the season, and it's cost. Joe, you and I can do a damn episode, man. Just going through games of this has happened, and these are the reason we lost. We could do a full episode on it, and nobody wants to do that or hear that because it would stink. But like. And that's a problem. It's more than just, it doesn't show up once a week or every other couple games. It's consistently in games that we lose, we go in these lulls. And there's a couple games like St. John's at home. We did the exact same thing and we won the game. It happens in wins too. It's just the nature of this team. And at this point, in beginning of March, with this construction of roster, with the injury we have, this is who we are. And there's nothing else we can really do.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think for me, one of the most frustrating elements of this team has been the inconsistency. You know, we come out and, you know, beat a Creighton team that's now in the top 10 in the country at home without Bryce Hopkins. We go on the road. We beat a really good Seton Hall team with a first team all-conference point guard in Kadari Richmond. On the road, we beat a quadrant one Xavier team that's played the toughest schedule in the country at their place. You know, it's the inconsistency of the team, because with all of the great wins that we've tallied without Bryce Hopkins, I'll include a hot start at the number one team in the country, Connecticut. There's as many disappointing losses, right? You cough up a 7-point lead in the final 4 minutes at Butler. You get your teeth kicked in twice now by Villanova. You know, you lose a frustrating game to St. John's on the road. Like, so there's been highs and there's been lows. But the constant here is that Bryce Hopkins has been not a part of the team now for well over 2 months, or in the neighborhood of 2 months, almost 2 months exactly. Which is frustrating because the team has done well without him. The team has done poorly without him, and there's really no constant. So I don't know.
They're inconsistent, Joe. You said it perfectly.
Yeah.
They're inconsistent, right? Because when you rely on two guys to score so much, right? I don't know what the percentage is of how many points they like combine average a game like that. You know what I mean? You know what the number, I don't know what the number is,
yeah,
but it's a lot. And when you rely on two guys so much, and the other team knows it, right? Like, the other team's not idiots. The other team knows it, and there's really talented teams in this conference. There's really talented coaches. There's really talented players. There's great defenders. They know exactly who you are. And if they can somewhat control it, like, we have two options. We don't have a third. We had a third, and that third was gone. And when you have that third, and then you have the rest of the supporting cast around you, it works. But when that third goes, the rest of those guys become way more important, and they're just not at that level. They're not there yet. They're too young. They're too inexperienced, or that's just not the level they can play in college basketball, right? And it's unfortunate, and it's the reality of where this team is, right? It's going to be, if the season doesn't go the way we want it to go in the next 2 weeks, right, Joe? Because we got 2 weeks left. College basketball, we got 2 weeks left of the season, depending on like what we want to do with this year. And if we look back when you and I are recording post Sunday of when they released the bracket, and we're recording the next day of like the season recap, right, or whatever it is, we'll look back of potentially of these what ifs of this season and what this season could have been. But they can completely change that whole narrative if they go and play their you know what's off this week and next week, and make it really freaking hard for that committee to not put this team in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think you said it perfectly. You know, as much as there are certain elements that are out of our control, with respect to this final week here, you know, there is as much that's in our control, and that's going 2-0, or at least, you know, going 1-0 tomorrow, tonight, you know, since everyone's listening to this Tuesday against Georgetown.
A couple times.
Yeah. And let me tell you, that's not going to be a tough game. And John Rothstein is already grooming the narrative that, you know, Ed Cooley has an opportunity to take away Providence's at-large hopes.
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong. He's kind of an ass for putting that out there.
He's not wrong though.
Here's my gripe with John Rothstein.
No. I opened a can of worms, didn't I?
He is a big headlines guy. He follows the headlines. He looks at box scores and he knows all of the, you know, the top scores, you know. But like, what drove me nuts is the defense. Like, let's take a step back here. You look at the 2020 Providence Friars 4 years ago, the team with Pipkins, David Duke, whatever.
Yeah.
The defensive importance of Malik White would have never been picked up by John Rothstein because the headline was Lawan Pipkins. That's the type of reporter that John Rothstein is. Mm-hmm. And listen, when you claim to be college basketball's hungriest insider and you only follow the headlines, that becomes obvious. But man, when he put that tweet out there that, you know, Cooley has the opportunity to end our at-large hopes and Hilltop Hoops and Hoya Paranoia and all of those loser Georgetown burners started eating it up, I was like, damn, like, don't be such an ass.
But Joe, you don't think like Ed Cooley wants this?
Oh, of course he does.
Like, know how exactly what, because he knows, he's not like, he knows exactly if we lose on Tuesday night that you're not done, right? Because you can beat UConn, you can win four, like, you can win a handful of games in the Big East tournament, and you're probably in, right? But you're pushing your absolute luck, like, way more than it ever should be if you lose Tuesday night, right? Like, Tuesday is a must win, and 100%. If Saturday was a 99.9%, this is a 99.999. Just keep adding more nines.
No. There is no if, and, or buts about it. We could lose to Georgetown and beat UConn, and a Q4 loss like that is going to keep us out. It's going – losing to Georgetown would – keep us out of the tournament, keep us out of an at-large bid. Unless, of course, like
you, unless you beat UConn and go to Saturday night.
Right. Unless you beat UConn on Saturday, then you beat UConn somehow at the Big East tournament. Then okay.
Yeah, because then you would add a couple more wins. But no, I whatever, right? We're too far down the road. But no, Tuesday night, 100%. I agree with you. They know exactly what it is. Georgetown knows what it is. English knows exactly what it is. And it's I've said this so many times, I probably should get this tattooed on me. It's gut checked on. And like we said this earlier in the year when Bryce Hopkins went down, and what does this team want to be? And what does this team want to be remembered by? You don't want to be just remembered by the season that was lost because Bryce Hopkins was injured. You want to be remembered of what you accomplished this season and everything you can still accomplish everything you set your goals on in October and November. In these next 2 weeks, but it starts Tuesday night, right? Like, it's not a pretty win. It doesn't mean anything, but it gets you to 19 wins. It gets you to 10 wins in Big East play. That's important. And it pushes you to a huge game Saturday night. And you never know, right? Like, you have a Villanova team, UConn team Saturday night, Joe, that would already have basically a one seed locked up for the most part in the NCAA tournament, has the one seed locked up for the Big East tournament. I don't know. Maybe they're a little flat-footed. Doesn't mean as much to them potentially. Obviously, Dan Hurley will have the team gunning, but you never know.
I mean, not to entirely overlook Georgetown here, but UConn already won the Big East regular season championship. Yes. They're playing Marquette without Tyler Kolek in the middle of the week. I think that game's Wednesday night.
Wednesday night.
You know, they might be in a position where Hurley wants to rest the guys Saturday, which is rare in college basketball. It's more of an NFL thing, but you never know. You never know what UConn we're going to get on Saturday. If they're complacent because they already won the Big East title, if they're trying to rest guys, or if, you know, they come in with the mentality like F Providence, like let's kick their asses. Like
exactly.
And you just don't know what version.
That's probably what they do. Well, that's probably what the message is.
That's what the message will be. But you know, who knows?
I got a question for you, Joe.
Let me hear it.
I got not a question, but the spread Tuesday night, because we never get to talk about this. Not saying like we want to talk about the spread, but every time we record, like the spread of the next game is never out.
Oh, but it's tomorrow. Normally it's Wednesdays.
That's what I'm saying. What is your? I just looked at it on my phone. I'm assuming you haven't seen it. What is your guess?
I'm gonna say we're favored by like 5.
Close 7.
Yeah, that's about right.
So take that what you take that what whatever information you want. But we never get to talk about it. Not talk about. It. We never get to mention it because it's never out. It's usually out the afternoon before. So.
No, that makes sense. Here's the thing with Georgetown, right? They played with their hair on fire offensively at our place in January. Let's keep in mind, right? Like Jaden Epps said this in the post-game press conference where Ed Cooley talked all about himself for 40 minutes. The players were aware that they were coming back to Cooley's old stomping grounds and they wanted to play for him. Cooley was aware of how hostile the environment would be, or maybe he wasn't, but I'd like to think that he has the wherewithal to understand, you know,
he had to be aware.
Yeah. It's different now because that first matchup is already out of the way. I can guarantee you that they are not selling out Capital One Arena for Providence to come down there and play Georgetown at home. I would risk my entire savings on that they're not selling out Capital One Arena Tuesday night.
I agree.
Georgetown historically this season has played better on the road in front of fans than at home in their own building. Now let's keep in mind here. This does include, you know, coughing up a 15-point lead to Xavier over the weekend and losing, I think it was by 8 or 9 at home. But anyway, the point that I'm trying to make here is that, you know, Georgetown, the coaches, the players, they knew what the first matchup meant. They're not naive. They're going to know what the second matchup means. But I think the circumstances have changed. Cooley's not returning home. He's now home. He's at his new home, and it's divine providence that he's there. But Georgetown hasn't played well in front of their home fans. It's just the teams that they'll give a run for their money on the road, pound them at home. I'm sure Kim and the coaching staff are aware of this. You know, we just need to come in there and kick their teeth in, is what it comes down to. And Georgetown's defense should allow for that to happen. I was talking to you about this before we started recording. Georgetown players do not defend with their arms up. There was one point in time during the Xavier game over the weekend I was watching, Rowan Brumbaugh was guarding, I forget who it was. I forget if it was McKnight or Oliveri, but he was guarding one of Xavier's guards with his hands at his side. Like this is why Georgetown's losing games. Those guys don't know how to defend. So, you know, for as putrid as the offense was, Providence's offense against Villanova on Saturday, Georgetown's defense is 10 times worse. So even if Carter and Oduro are off, other guys will have the opportunity to step up because chances are, Georgetown's not going to be as defensively sound as any of the other teams that we've played in conference so far.
Yeah, Georgetown's 320th in opponents' points per game.
Yeah, there you go.
Not a good defensive team, right? And we know they weren't a good defensive team against X, right? But they can score the ball. They have guys that can make shots. Jaden Epps, one of them. He takes a lot of shots. He'll shoot no matter what. Force him into bad shots, he'll keep shooting. And that's one of the reasons Georgetown has lost a couple games because he just shoots, and shoots. And sometimes it works, but a lot of times it doesn't. He takes a high volume of shots. But this Providence team should be embarrassed of what happened this past week, right? Mm-hmm. Look, losing 2 games in the Big East, it's part of the Big East, it's part of college basketball. But what you had at stake this week to get boat raced on the road at Marquette, basically not even show up. And then not show up in the second half at home against Villanova, which was as close to as must win as it was embarrassing. It was an embarrassing week for this team, this coaching staff and everything. And you have a chance to kind of right the wrong that you did last week. And it starts Tuesday night. You're playing a Georgetown team that, outside of making it in one of the most insane runs in the Big East tournament, they're not playing for anything outside of one, trying to spoil some team next week in Madison Square Garden, but they're also trying to spoil our season, right? And they can do that Tuesday night. But I agree with you, Joe. It won't be a lot of fans. They play better on the road. And yeah, they're not a good defensive team. They're 320th in opponent points per game. That's then they don't defend. They don't force turnovers. And yeah, so it's one of those teams where, yeah, effective field goal percentage opponents, they're 354th in opponent effective field goal percentage. No, wow. Said they don't defend. I gave you two stats that say they don't defend. Providence should have a bounce back offensive game, which for the most part was not a great offensive week.
Yeah. I mean,
and they had funny. Their moments.
It's funny because statistically, if you look at, you know, our shooting percentages, 40% from the field against Villanova, you know, you hit 10 threes. It's not terrible. It's not great. It's not what you want, but it's not terrible. It was our defense the past two games that shit the bed. You get Villanova shoot 51% from the field and 56% from behind the arc in your home gym. Marquette shot, I don't have the stat sheet in front of me, but Marquette shot, you know, similar numbers, high 40s, low 50s. Like, that's not going to win you games, you know. Offense wins games, defense wins championships. In the Big East, letting teams shoot in the 50s is not going to win you a game. It was an embarrassing week. You know, you got boat raced in Milwaukee. You come home, you put up a good first half, and then you let a very inconsistent Villanova team, you know, walk all over you in the second half. You got to hope that, you know, Kim has these guys energized for Tuesday, which should hopefully be a bounce back win ahead of the number one, or I guess now it's the number two, the second ranked team in the country coming in on Saturday.
Yeah. I guess closing thoughts. It was a tough one. Obviously, you were in the building on Saturday. I was watching at home. It was a tough one. Tough pill to swallow. Because that was 100% a winnable game. If you want to classify Marquette as not a winnable game, that's 100% fair. But Saturday against Nova was 100% winnable.
That was a winnable game. I mean,
you didn't show up in the second half at home, right? And that's a tough pill to swallow. It was unfortunate because they started putrid and they gave themselves once again no shot. Right, they had a little bit of a glimpse down the stretch. They got it to 7. They got it to 8. Obviously, they couldn't make that stop or two to get it to like 4 or 5 and give them a shot with under 4 minutes, because you would have a chance. But that first 6 minutes did them in, right? That 20-4 run to start the second half did them in, and it's did them in a lot this year. And hopefully, maybe they figure out something this week. But it starts Tuesday. You got to take care of business. I can't stress that enough. You have to take care of business Tuesday night. Joe and I can talk about UConn on Saturday because we're not playing the game on Tuesday. You have to take care. And if we were playing in the game, it would be a problem. But you have to take care of business Tuesday night. No ifs, and, or buts.
Yeah. All right. Before we finish up here, Peter, I have a trivia question for you.
Oh boy. Is this going to make me look stupid?
No, it's not. I saw this on Twitter a couple times over the past few days. But when was the last time the Providence Friars won a basketball game in March?
It was 2 years ago.
You know what game it was?
Was it Creighton at home? No. It was Richmond in the round of 32.
Yes, it was. So the last time this program has witnessed a win in the month of March was March 19th, 2022, which on March 4th, 2024, is separated by 716 days. That's how long it's been since this program has won a game in March. I'm not. I'm not. I'm not saying that to be a Debbie Downer here, but last year's winless March is 110% a result of Ed Cooley's selfish intentions to pack up and leave. So, you know, if I'm Devin Carter, you know, Corey Floyd, Castro, like some of the guys on this team,
Jaden Pierre,
that, you know, went through a winless March last year because of that bastard, I want to take it back and win our first program win in this month in 2 years over him. That's my closing thought.
I like that. I don't need to say anything else. I like those closing thoughts.
All right. Providence will take on Georgetown tomorrow night, or as you're listening to this, tonight at 7 p.m. The game will be on Fox Sports 1. You'll hear from us again Friday morning after we record on Thursday night. As always, be sure to check out House Enterprise, house-enterprise.com to get, you know, all the action from across college basketball. This time of year, our content creators will be covering everything that there is, so make sure you head over to the website. For Peter DiBiase, I'm Joe Howie. Thank you for listening, and as always, go Friars.
Go Friars.